Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you. Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to the Runner's World podcast with me, Rick Pearson.
And me, Ben Hobson.
Today we're talking about female safety on the run, which is off the back of the Strava end of year report that looked at, it revealed that UK women are over twice as likely as the global average to feel unsafe on the run. And we want to think about why that is, because the UK is after all a reasonably safe country when looked at on a global scale, ranking 34th out of 163 countries on the Global Peace Index. But obviously women don't feel safe on the run. And we're here with lots of our female colleagues, which feels appropriate rather than you and I chatting about female safety on the run.
You mean we can't talk, you and me wouldn't have a really insightful and engaged standpoint on this?
Yeah, I think it probably adds a little bit of credibility. So we've got Jen, Rachel and Ali from the team. Jen, why don't you kick us off with, because this isn't the first time we've heard stats of this nature. We had the Reclaim Your Run campaign that we did a few years ago. So give us a sense of what that was and what that some of the stats at that showed us.
Yeah, so we ran a campaign in 2021 called Reclaim Your Run, and the aim of that was to raise awareness of and reduce the harassment and endangerment that women experience while running. And as part of that, we did a survey where 60% of women told us that they had been harassed when running. 25% reported being regularly subjected to sexist comments or unwanted sexual advances. And 11% said they had actually stopped running altogether because of harassment, which is obviously super sad. And we also had hundreds of female runners sharing their experiences of being harassed while running and how that's affected their running and their lives. And then finally, as part of that campaign, we backed a campaign called Crime Not Compliment, which aimed to make public sexual harassment punishable by law. So although it can fall under the umbrella of other criminal offences, such as sexual assault and some other public order offences, there hasn't actually been a specific law against street harassment, although it does now look like that is going to be introduced.
Okay, so it's kind of a work in progress on that front.
Yeah.
And then Ali, you caught up with someone who'd been doing similar work at the University of Manchester.
Yeah, so two researchers, Dr. Caroline Miles and Professor Rose Broad from the University of Manchester, they've been working in partnership with Merseyside and Greater Manchester Police to conduct research on the experiences of abuse and harassment of women runners. So they basically looked at police data over a two-year period. They did an online survey of 498 women, and they have audio diaries with women about their day-to-day experiences as well. So in terms of key findings, one of the key things was that very few women report harassment to the police. So only about 5% of the women they spoke to had been to the police about an incident. And in total, there were 88 crimes reported across that two-year period, which actually is not a lot in the grand scheme of things. Yet of these 498 women who responded to the survey, 340, and that's 68%, so exactly the same from our Runners World survey, said they had experienced abuse while running. So more commonly, this was verbal abuse, being flashed at or being followed. Now, what the researchers actually said to me is that not all men do this, and we want to hammer that home in this podcast, but it is always men. So no women in this survey said that they were harassed by another woman. Yeah. All of these crimes that were reported were by men. And one of the key reasons they don't report to the police are not thinking it's serious enough, low confidence in the police, and women saying it was so normal that they just expected it. And they called this last point a subconscious risk assessment. So the researchers said to me that women normalise these experiences, they normalise their fear, and they also normalise what they do to make themselves feel safe. So whether that's carrying rape alarms, keys in hand, carrying your phone, etc. even thinking in terms of where you're going running, who you're running with, all of these things that I guess, like myself, I would consider so normal. I would say, you know, obviously I'm not going to run across this park in the dead of night, and obviously I'll have my phone with me and etc. But actually, that is quite a lot of prior preparation.
Yeah.
You're not just thinking, oh, I'm going to head out for a run. Wonder which route I'm going to take today.
Yeah.
It's so much more than that.
Yeah.
So that was really the key thing from it, was how normal it is, I think.
Yeah, I think that normalization has always been that stark point from all of these surveys that when we've had the results in, and kind of like, from yours and my perspective, I won't speak for you, but from my perspective, my route planning it never comes into my head, or it's not certainly a point where I go, how safe am I going to be doing that run?
Yeah,
that's not a that doesn't come in. That's like, oh, that might be nice.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
You know, but
how long is it?
Where's it going? What am I going to see when I'm running? Whereas I would say the majority of female runners, there is an additional, is it safe? Should I run there at any point? Is it going to be okay in the middle of the day?
Who should I tell?
Yeah, and all those sorts of things. So that, I think that normalization is really like the sort of big takeaway in terms of thought processes that have to go ahead before you go on a run.
Yeah, I think in terms of those kind of mental calculations that women go through as well, I think that creates a lot of anxiety, which then sort of negates the kind of mental health benefit of running in the first place. If you're like feared of all of these things, you're not going out for a kind of mind clearing run at that point, are you? So,
I mean, I had this, on my run the other day. I was sort of running in the evening, and obviously it's winter. Not everyone can run during the day on a working day. You're running in the morning before work, after work, it's dark. And, you know, I've been running for years. Like, we've all been, you know, lots of us have been running for years. And I'd say I was quite a confident runner. But there was a part where I'd go through the park, and then suddenly I saw like a group ahead of me. And your senses are always heightened in the dark anyway. But then you just stop yourself, and you're always sort of that mindfulness aspect of running, like, is sort of like compromised. And I was like, oh, where should I go? Where can I duck? And it's just like you have like split second moments where it's like during the day I'd feel quite confident, but there I was like, where should I go? What if they say something? What if they follow me? And it's like all these like things go through your mind, and you know, it's like you said, Ali, it's like it becomes normal, and it's like something that you almost kind of like expect to feel, and you shouldn't, but you're always like on edge to an extent.
I think by the normal aspect is like when I head out on a run, I don't think I'm going to be attacked, if that makes sense. Like every time I go out on a run, I'm sure there's some women that are scared of that every time. I don't really think about it, but it's because I am thinking about it, because I've already laid the foundations down if I do get attacked. If that makes sense. So I'm like almost avoiding the possibility that that happens. And as well, it's almost like I am preparing for the worst case scenario. I'm not preparing to be catcalled. I almost expect to be catcalled. Whereas I'm preparing if someone sort of jumps out at me or something like that. That's what I'm more fearful of. It's kind of, even though there's a massive spectrum of harassment on the run, it's funny what you just expect to tolerate.
Yeah. Well, we got a lot of comments on our Instagram page when we put this out there. Some of them probably a little more credible than others, but I thought maybe we could go through a few of them, try and answer them, because I think some of them are coming from a place of maybe from like general ignorance on the subject, and actually it would be nice if we could end this podcast with people feeling like they knew a little bit more about maybe how people would like them to behave on the run. So let's start with this one. It says, aside from offering to run with people who feel unsafe, I'm not sure what we're supposed to do with this information. That was from a male runner. Can we talk about maybe some of the practical behaviours that you think it would be nice to see male runners doing?
You make a good point. Like, we don't say that all men are bad, you know, men should, it's just the way that sort of women feel. And I think sort of as a starting point, giving women space, not running up close behind or sort of going past you quickly, or sort of like quick movements, or you know, verbalizations, you know, that kind of sense of making women jump, most of the time unintentionally, but it's just any element of surprise just to avoid that.
Spooking them,
exactly,
I think it's a big thing, especially when it's dark. Like we said before, you're sort of heightened your senses, and if someone's sort of running up behind you, you are a bit on edge.
Cross the road, do you think that's
cross the road's a big one. I mean, I've normally if I'm running on a pavement and maybe I'm coming up behind a male runner or they're on the other side of the road, I will cross to the other side of the road to make sure that I'm on a different one. And I've had it before where then that person has then crossed and followed me onto the other side of the road that I've crossed. And that automatically makes me think you're following me. If I've crossed to the other side of the road and then you've also crossed to the other side of the road, regardless of whether you're actually just getting onto there because it's your route or whatever, I'd just say, like, give me that space till I've ran off somewhere. Don't sort of crowd me, because that is just such an obvious way to make someone feel like you are sort of creeping up behind them.
Yeah. Another one as well, I always sit, so when I run by myself, which is most of the time, I go out for a run because I want to go for a run. It's my headspace, it's for training, whatever it is, it's my sole activity and I don't want to be disturbed. I don't want to be bothered. I just want to get on with it.
Yeah.
And quite a few times, actually, I'll go for a run and, for example, through a park, and there'll be someone sat on a bench and be like, oh, go on, love, keep going, go faster. And although the intention may be as a compliment or encouragement or something, I find it quite unnerving and distracting, and it makes me very self-conscious, especially if you're going around a park doing laps. You feel like you're being watched, and, you know, just like you would go to the shop and buy food, go for a walk, you know, it's your personal act. You just want to go about your own business, and I'm just going about my own business and I don't want to be disturbed. I mean, this is just me, but I like to think that I can speak for many women. You know, you just want to not be bothered or commented on or feel like you're being watched, because it does make you feel self-conscious. And especially if you're new to running and just getting into it and you're feeling quite self-conscious about it anyway, it's just not helpful, even if you've got the best intentions.
Yeah, I think that's what you've got to remember too, is that, like, we've been running a while, so it might not bother us as much if someone says a comment. But if you are quite new to running and you're, you know, you are self-conscious about maybe what you look like, how you're running, all these worries, if someone says a comment, that could be something that actually stops you from wanting to go on that run off in that first place.
Yeah.
I think there's a greater scale of just, like, I think it's more in it that someone has the sense that they're perfectly entitled to intrude upon your personal space. I think, again, to what Rachel's saying, like, and that's very much a power play. So even if they don't consider it, oh, I'm just saying something I like. Well, first of all, there's absolutely no way that, come on, love, go faster, is said to, come on, mate, you can go fast. That's not happening, is it? Like, they're not shouting out at men at the same time.
Yeah.
I've never had it, you know, a bit of encouragement. But what I mean is that there's still this absolutely overarching sense of that I'm entitled to just basically interact with you. I'm entitled as a man to encroach upon the thing you're doing because patriarchy, etc. And that's like, that's a given. And I think that running is one of those times when there's a vulnerability to it. There's a real sort of, you know, I don't know, it's just one of those situations where that is why those comments are so significant, whereas people would just dismiss them as absolutely like not.
Yeah.
I think that, like, catcalling and, like, wolf whistling has been, like, just trivialised as, like, just something that, like, for years and years we've just accepted that as something that just happens. And I think that's also why it's important to look at, like, what we can do outside of running to combat this problem of female harassment on the run, and there being that cultural shift around, like, redefining what is acceptable behaviour and acceptable comments.
Yeah, agreed. Look, here's another one. And this gets trotted out quite a bit, which is, the reality is women may feel unsafe, but the majority of violent crime and murder is done to men. Which I think, you can prove anything with statistics, but I think there are some statistics that would support that idea. You touched upon it a little bit when you talked with the professor at Manchester. So it was kind of like the perpetrator, however.
Yeah, I think that's it, isn't it? It's that line again of not all men do this, but it's always men. And I think, sure, maybe more men are attacked than women, but who's attacking those men? Other men? And I think that's the problem, is that, you know, we're not saying that you're necessarily the problem, but if you're scared of other men, then surely you can get on board with what we're saying here, that are threatening, you know?
I think that's true, because I think there's some men, I think, when they hear this stuff, think, well, don't you think I get scared too? And, like, I've been mugged before, actually. I was mugged when I was, like, 14. And I was also almost mugged again when I was 15. And actually, like, growing up in South London in, like, the early 2000s. It was occupational hazard getting mugged, and it did seem to be a kind of teenage boy and teenage boy thing. So I've got sympathy with like the idea that men are scared too, and I think I've felt that. But the solution is still men behaving better towards principally women, but also to other men.
And I think that you can say that, of course, like everyone's experienced fear, but it's not a daily thing for you, right? Like you had that experience of a mugging, and you felt threatened on occasion, I suspect. Like you've run past a big group of lads before probably felt a bit uneasy. But I think the context of this is that that's they're in the minority of your experiences and they don't inform your day to day, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think the echoes of that can be longer and louder than maybe some people expect. But I also think that we're talking about different fears in some ways, aren't we? Like my greatest fear would be like, oh my God, I might be mugged again. But I think a lot of the female fears is actually, we're talking about sort of sexual violence, aren't we?
Yes, I was going to say, I think that's the fear that men won't have is you could be attacked, you could be beaten up, sure. But I think there's like that very sexual element to it with women as well of like, I could be raped. Like something could happen here. Yeah, decent, I think exposure,
that
anything.
That is the fear with the catcalling, wolf whistling. If somebody shouts something at you out of a window when they're driving past, the fear then is that it then escalates into something kind of more serious.
Yeah. And if I'm thinking of myself running through a dark park at night, I'm actually not scared that someone's just going to physically attack me. It's the sexual assault. That's what I'm scared of.
Yeah.
Which I don't think is actually ever in a man's... a male runner's mind going out. It's not a fear, is it?
I wouldn't imagine so. It's not mine. It's not, I can give you my one opinion from me. Yeah, it's not. It's absolutely not.
Yeah. We had another one, which was headlines like this have been shared for years and we've not seen any real shift in attitude or reduction in instances of violence against women. So often the conversation becomes a debate about how it's not all men, a way of telling women what they should do to prevent violence against them, making them responsible for the problem they didn't create rather than essentially telling maybe men to change their behaviour. What do you think about that, Jen, maybe?
I think the onus definitely shouldn't be on women to moderate their behaviour. I think there needs to be a cultural shift of harassment not being acceptable to make our streets safer. It shouldn't be on us to be like, oh, we're going to run where it's light and there's loads of people around. And like, as I mentioned before, I think that includes sort of challenging that kind of culture of misogyny, which trivialises things like verbal harassment. Because I think ultimately, if you allow that to happen, then that could be like a gateway into more serious offences.
Of course. I mean, the moment that someone's allowed to, you know, and they all go, "Wee, gosh, give her a shout," "Wee," and they're all together, you know. Of course, like if there's a group of five, one of those out of those five could be an absolute deviant and like is immediately like, oh, right. Okay, like that's, you know, and he becomes some sort of sexual predator because he's that small incident where his mates went, of course, you know, you just shout something, it's funny.
It's funny though, I mean, Kate's not here, but she said, and I think she's right, it's a rare man who actually calls his mates on that stuff, even if you don't agree with it. Like, and I think I would say nothing, and that would be my way of saying disapproving, but it's different to being like, you know, whatever male context you might be in down the pub, it's quite rare, I think, to hear other blokes call out other blokes on this stuff.
Yeah, I would agree.
It's quite a rare thing.
I do agree with that comment as well. I think there's a lot of work to do. It doesn't feel like a lot has changed in a way over the few years. But then I guess if you look at that Strava report, then how different the results are in the UK compared to other places. And you might think, actually, is this a positive thing? Are more women feeling like that because we're talking about it more? Like, is it even more normalised in these other countries and that's why their results aren't as high as ours? So although you could definitely look at those results like a negative, and predominantly they are, let's also not forget that we are talking about these things more now and it's important we continue to do so. And these shifts do take change and it is sometimes a generational thing. But I think the more we talk about it now, the more women will get used to it and we will start to gradually report these things more and more.
This is the Runner's World podcast.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I think this next one's quite interesting, which is I can't quite get on board with it, but it's probably an interesting standpoint that many people feel. And it's that what are women's fears based upon is essentially, could it be a perception that is fueled by the UK media? Let's face it, the media are responsible for a lot of fears that are instilled in us.
Oh, I mean, I can only sort of talk from my personal perspective, but sometimes I think, okay, I'm on a run, I've been catcalled, or there's a group in front of me and I'm feeling a bit vulnerable. My mind instantly goes to, if they say something or do something, how am I going to react? What do I do? Do I just run faster? Do I say something in return? And it's just like a kind of instinctive like fear that I will respond in the wrong way and make things worse. And I just think sometimes I think, you know, okay, right, I'm going at a decent speed, so if something happens I'll just speed up, I'll go quicker, I don't say anything, or should I say something? And it's just like, I don't know whether that's just me, but my mind goes through so many scenarios which elevates that sense of fear, like, because you are in a kind of vulnerable situation. So I don't think, I mean, obviously, you know, the media is talking about it, and talking about it is a good thing. But I think on an individual level, women all have their own fears, and it's self-preservation and self-protection. And, you know, just like any other kind of, you know, if you've someone's robbing your house, for example, you think, what do I do? How do I get myself out of the scenario? And you are sort of preparing almost for the worst. So I think it is a kind of just a natural gut reaction.
Yeah,
I think we're taught from a young age to do that as well. I don't think I was sort of blissfully unaware going about running however freely I wanted, and then suddenly everything was reported in the media and that changed. I think we're sort of conditioned from the age of like 4 or 5 when you start school to sort of be thinking about our own personal safety as women. And I think, what were the media meant to do? Not report it when a woman gets attacked on the run? You know, if anything, it's sort of, I don't know, I guess it confirms our own worst fears in a way.
Yeah, totally. I think definitely the death of Aisling Murphy, when the school teacher from Ireland who was running down the canal, that immediately comes to my mind every time now I run down the canal. Sarah Everard, her murder when she was walking home and a police officer brutally raped and murdered her when she was walking home. And yes, the media reports on these things because they are happening, and it is in your mind when you go out for a run or a walk, unfortunately.
I'm interested in some of like the compromises maybe you make when you're kind of route planning. Like, would it affect what you wear while running? Would that be a consideration as well?
I think it's such a personal one. I know for a lot of women it would. Actually, the researchers from the University of Manchester were saying to me, a lot of women responded to their survey and said, you know, it's really hot out in the summer. I really just want to go out in shorts and a sports bra, but I don't feel like I can because it will attract attention. I maybe don't feel like that. But again, that's the whole normalising thing. Like if I go out in a sports bra and shorts, I know I am going to get a couple of catcalls during the summer months, but I've got my headphones in, so maybe I don't quite hear it and it doesn't bother me as much. But I know obviously for a lot of women, that would be enough that they wouldn't want to dress like that because they don't want to have to almost like think, yeah, I am going to get this.
I was just going to say, oh, I don't think it's ever, I've ever thought, oh, I won't wear shorts or something. But then I think about it and I've never actually just been running out in a sports bra in the summer. Whereas I would go on like my indoor turbo trainer just in my sports bra. But maybe it's just a subconscious thing that I just wouldn't do it in case somebody said so, I drew like attention to myself. You do these behaviours perhaps without knowing.
Yeah,
agreed. And I think... even route planning, I mean, I run in the early hours before work and my route that I take is different to what I do on my weekend long runs because on the weekend I would go through parks and things like that, whereas in the early hours it's dark. And I actually find running in the early hours scarier than running after work at night because I think the early hours it's actually really quiet out and there's not a lot of people around. So I stick to absolute main roads only, very boring routes, but it's lit. And I know that actually, if something were to happen, there's people nearby. Yeah. I don't feel so lonely. So I do just automatically take certain routes depending on what time of day I'm going.
Yeah, I mean, I would never like run in the park at night. But mind you, Rick, when we were talking about this, you said that you also wouldn't.
I think I'm more the jumpy end of the male runners, possibly as a result of some of those sort of teenage experiences. But I think still I'd probably be, I'm not having some of those same considerations or fears that you're describing. But I think running through a park dead at night, I think a lot of runners wouldn't fancy that actually. And I think kind of rightly so actually.
Yeah, I had someone say to me on Instagram the other day, like, oh my gosh, I can't believe you're not running with a light. Like I hate the dark so much, I can't run without a light. So obviously other women have this... thing too. For me, just running on lit pavements in the morning is enough that I don't need to take a head torch or a chest torch. But for some women, it's like, no, that's an extra precaution and I will not run without it. So it's quite interesting that dictates sort of the kit that they need as well. And it makes running more expensive and inaccessible, sort of the more safety features you feel that you need to double up on.
Talk about being like a male ally or like an active bystander. And I think that's one of the solutions that's talked about, is that like if say you or I were to see this stuff happening,
yeah,
it would kind of be on us to actually call it, like to do something.
Yeah,
has anyone ever like experienced that, like, or seen that happening? I'm just because I know some men are probably quite reluctant to do that as well. Maybe they're scared themselves or whatever. But
I mean, I can only talk about an incident that happened to my partner where she was actually attacked. Not running, she was just out on the street in the middle of the day in West London. She got accosted by a man, and it was a woman who stepped in whilst others walked past. It was another woman who stepped in and made enough of a scene and a fuss to sort of stop the whole situation. So I think you're right. I think that, again, it comes down to that's a woman witnessing probably an experience that she's had, whereas there is a... Well, there's a reluctance probably from a male point of view from like getting involved in something bad happening to them.
Yeah.
There's a fear. I mean, that's probably probably more of a city-based fear.
Yeah, possibly, yeah.
Rather than anything else. But apart from that, that's the one anecdote that I can think of where it had nothing to do. Men were the only, there was no rescuer or,
Yeah, I'm trying to think if sort of, you were to see, I ran past some builders, for instance, who were doing some works by the edge of the park, and they all stared at me as I ran past. If you were walking past while they all stared and then maybe one of them did say something, would you say something to them? It's one of those that's quite tricky.
I think if I'd like to think that if I saw something like some kind of physical violence happening or something that was like very clearly very wrong and distressing, that I would say something. I never have. I'm trying to think. I don't think I've seen an incident that's been as serious as that. But I've probably heard things that I think that was a bit much, and haven't said anything.
I always think that the builder stuff is, or people in vans and stuff is, from a saying something thing is an absolute definite, because they're employed by someone, especially builders. If they're a tradesperson and they're working on a building site and they do something and you say something to them and they come back in any sort of way that's like aggressive towards you as someone saying, don't speak to them like that, they're employed by someone. They're on work time, like then you just escalate it up the chain, and like hopefully you meet someone within the company who's like reasonable and understands that what's happened.
Yeah, essentially.
That's in my head. That's the thought process of just like, well, no, it's not. If I was at work and I did that, you'd get called to HR and fired. So it's like that's the same thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's it, isn't it? I think it's almost like sad that us three women are probably sat here thinking, yeah, we've had this many times, but none of us can really think of an example where we've heard someone call someone out on it. Kind of the ratio of what's actually happening to the calling out is clearly not great.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the idea of kind of being an active bystander, like you said, is actually a really good sort of actionable point to take away from it. But yeah, as we've also said, yeah, judging how to do it safely and effectively is quite tricky sometimes, because you kind of probably fear for your own safety, and so it's a difficult one to judge, and you can appreciate it can be scary for some people for sure.
I mean, exactly, it's just based on your fear, your from the reaction that you'll give, like as I sort of said before about like it's the scenario you're in. So if someone's to catcall me in the street, I wouldn't react, whereas I've been catcalled by someone driving past, I've shot them the middle finger and, you know, might have said something under my breath because I thought, it's okay, they're driving off, they can't get me. And so my reaction from feeling very scared in one instance, feeling very angry in another instance, is basically dependent on how safe I feel doing that reaction. Mm. Like one, I could be punched in the face, the next, they've driven off, so I'm okay. And I think it is very much like a spur of the moment sort of reaction and the fear associated with it.
I think if you're kind of brave enough to, it's worth calling them out though. Like I've seen videos of people sort of doing it and these people in the van sort of flounder when someone actually says something to them. And it's like, actually, if you don't say anything at all, they're going to keep thinking that's fine and do it to other women who are just going to also put up with it. Whereas actually, if you start to say something, they might think, well, is it worth my ag that every person I yell out of a van to is going to like sort of be like, you know, say that again. Or like, do you want to have a conversation about this?
Yeah, I was gonna,
it might start to actually slowly put them off.
I think that, have you ever had the experience where either you've, because if you match aggression with aggression, then that situation could
escalate.
Have you ever sort of gone, oh, it's an interesting point you made there, sir. Would you explain why you felt the need to? I mean, that takes a lot. I'm sort of half joking, because obviously that's a huge fucking, like, you know, roll of the dice in terms of what could happen. But I just feel like, have any of you ever felt brave enough to sort of meet that situation like that? Try and get an explanation out of it.
No, I just probably do the worst thing possible, just out of fear, just pretend it's not happened, put my head down and go, please drive off really fast, or like, and yeah, just wait until they're out of distance. Like,
I have occasionally locked eyes with them and stared them down, and that does unnerve them a little bit, I suppose, if you sort of like look at them and they're looking at you and they sort of, their words, you sort of can see that they're not quite sure what to do about it. So even that can work sometimes as a death stare. But I think, like you said, Jen, quite often it's like when you're thinking of a good comeback to someone sort of gets you and you think of a comeback about 2 hours later. It's a bit like that when people sort of catcall you. You think, oh God, in the moment I should have done this, but you kind of freeze a little bit. You're like, oh, I'm not quite sure what to do.
I do think the more that we do that, the more it would, and bystanders sort of intervene, that will help to drive this cultural shift of it not being acceptable.
It was a huge subject we could talk about all day, but we're gonna have to wrap it for the purposes of the podcast. But obviously it's an issue that we'd like to re-engage with going forward. So thanks very much for coming on the podcast, Jen, Ali, Rachel, and I think that's about it, Ben, isn't it? So that brings us to the end of this week's Runner's World podcast. Thanks very much for listening. If you have your own stories about harassment on the run or some of your own solutions, let us know at podcast@runnersworld.co.uk.
You can subscribe to the Runner's World magazine, get all those issues arriving at your front door. Just Google Runner's World UK subscription. There's a special offer. If you want just 3 issues for £5, head to runnersworld.com/UK/podcast offer to get that offer of 3 issues for just £5. Thank you very much for listening. You will hear from us next week.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.